12 minutes after 12, and it is the first Thursday. Hang on, it's not the first Thursday. We couldn't do New Year's Day, could we? But it, normally on the first Thursday of the month, we invite our friends in from AAA Records. So welcome back. Happy New Year. Hope you had a lovely Christmas. Jonathan Hare Bear Bacon.
Thank you very much. Happy New Year to you and all the listeners as well. Glad to be back. Well, you survived Christmas here.
Just. So look, it's we've got a subject. I mean, in the past, just remind us, what have we done in the past?
Oh, we didn't say it was going to be a quiz. We've done B-sides, we've done Christmas, we have done lots of other things as well. Christmas is still having an effect.
Yeah, we've done this is probably the four or five. Yeah, we've done this four or five times. Yeah,
we have.
Okay, so we've gone today for the double album.
But what do you mean by a double album?
Ah, well, two albums.
Yeah, but we're meaning the classic double album, aren't we? Because if you look at the rack of modern records now, almost everything is two discs, two vinyls, because people have got used to having CDs.
Yeah.
Which lasts 70, 80 minutes, and you can't fit that on one piece of vinyl. So double album to some people is going to sound a bit odd because, well, you know, to get all the music on, I've got to have two discs. I mean, if you look at a Taylor Swift album, there are always two vinyl discs because that's how long everything is these days because everyone got so used to the CD. But
really?
We're talking about when there was 20
proper
minutes on a side.
Yeah.
And then someone decided they needed a bit longer than 40 minutes for what they needed to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right. And I stumbled upon the first double album that I bought officially was there was an Elton John one, but it was from like on a Pickwick label, and it was live, and it was two live concerts. One was in the very early 70s, and the other one was it featured an old Rolling Stones thing, Take Me to the Pilot, which
that's
was
Elton John, but yeah,
was it?
Yeah, there was the album was called Here and There, I think, and it was, yeah, it was a 1970 and a 1974 concert,
yeah.
But that was an issue. I think that was originally issued as a single album. But
was
when
it?
They reissued it, the really interesting thing was the... We're going off on a tangent now.
Yeah.
The 1974 concert was the one where he brought John Lennon on, who'd been hadn't played live for years.
Right. Yeah.
And because they'd had a bet that whatever gets you through the night wouldn't get to number one, and it did, John Lennon said, all right, I will come and play it on stage with you. And it was his first, one of his last live appearances as well, but his first live appearance about 4 years.
Wow.
But that was never on the original album. But then when they reissued it a few years ago on CD,
yeah,
it's on there. So it's a great thing.
I don't remember it being on the vinyl album that I bought, I think it was Mr. Pickwick. It was $2.99 from Woolies. That was the first one. The first official one that I bought was, well, strangely enough, I think you got me a copy of it, but I had the original, and with the original came another album full of stuff that it was previously unreleased. Pretty sure the album was called Parade by the Skids.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and it is.
Again, that's not a double, and that's an album with a bonus disc. Isn't
yeah,
it?
See, now we're sort of setting the rules out, aren't we?
Yeah.
So the first official album, a double album that I was made aware of, and we had in our house, my brother bought it, was one that you had two copies of.
Two copies of.
You bought two copies of it.
You've lost me now.
We should point out that Jonathan's not my brother.
As far as we know.
Well, you don't know, do you? I mean, our family. And it was the Electric Light Orchestra.
Oh.
And Out of
yes,
the Blue.
Of course. Yeah, it's one of my favourites.
Yeah, because you bought two copies of it.
I bought two copies because I wanted... It's one of those ones... I think we did this a bit last year, didn't
yes.
we? Three gifts and all these odds and ends you get in albums, because that came with a poster, but the really interesting thing was it came with a sheet of cutouts that you could make a spaceship out of, and I wanted to make sure I could get a second copy so I could make the spaceship, which I finally did last year.
But
it wasn't really worth it.
My brother made his up, and I think I might have sat on it and squashed it,
mm-hmm.
much to his disgust. But didn't you? So you bought two, so you could make one up and keep the other
keep
one.
Keep one pristine collector.
Have you still
nerd.
Got it?
Yeah.
So how much would that be worth now?
It's not a massively valuable thing. Because, again, as with a lot of these albums, there were so many copies, everyone bought one, that the album itself is... You could probably buy... we've probably got a copy in the shop and it's probably about £12-16. But if it's got all the bits, if it's got the poster, if it's got the spaceship, if it's got the merchandise flyer, which they used to put in albums around, then join the fan club, get a T-shirt and get regular letters from Jeff Lynne and the guys as to how they're doing.
Right.
But it's still probably not going to reach £30, even if it's in really good condition.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
How sad is that?
Well, it's sad, but it's an odd thing. We get this a lot in the shop with people saying, I've got a Beatles album, it's really good, so it must be valuable. But when you consider how many copies were sold, it's all these albums, it's the rarity that puts the value on it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're going to talk about the White Album, I'm sure, which is one of the most famous double albums. And there are millions of those all over the place. But if you've got all an early copy, because they were all the original ones were numbered,
right?
So if you've got the lower the number you've got, the more valuable it is, because the first 10 were just given to the Beatles and their families. I think Ringo sold his, which was, he might have even had number one, but it was one of those really low numbers. He sold it a few years ago and it went for a phenomenal sum of money.
Wow,
absolutely phenomenal. But yeah, but it's the rarity factor of these things. So if you have a White Album and you want to know if it's valuable, the first thing to do is look on the back and see if it's got a barcode, because if it has, then it's a really modern one and it's not going to be worth that much. But does it open at the top rather than the side? All the early ones opened at the top.
Right.
Does it have black inner sleeves rather than the normal white ones? Does it have four prints of the Beatles? They came with four photographs. And does it have a big fold-up poster with all the lyrics on it? If you've got all those bits, and particularly if it's a mono copy rather than a stereo copy, then yeah, you're a low number, then it's going to be start to worth something, because those are the collectible ones. Always the early pressings are thought to be the best before the press disc wore out and they were still pressing the albums. Those are the really... The good ones that people want, whether you're audiophile or collector.
You really know your stuff, don't you?
Well, I ran a record shop.
So did you know all of this before? I mean, or did you take over the record shop first and then sort of?
I've always been a bit of a nerd for things like that. There's some bits I know nothing about, but some artists you find out about, and it's for me.
Yeah,
interesting for a lot of people. What? I just want to listen to the music, and that's absolutely fine. That's what it's all about at the end of the day. But you get collectors in any field, and yeah, it's all about what makes something collectible.
All right, okay. So just mention what tracks are on this here White Album of the Beatles, and it's a double album, yeah?
Yeah, with no singles on it.
No singles at all?
Never had singles, and they didn't do that back in the day. But I suppose the really famous track on it is... Back in the USSR,
right,
which opened up the album. There's also Obla Di Obla Da, lovely song called Blackbird, which a lot of people like, a little Paul McCartney solo thing. It's almost a bunch of solo tracks by the Beatles, because they were not particularly getting on well at the time, and so a lot of it was recorded individually by them, or just with one or two of them in the room.
Yeah.
And famously, they had an argument when they were doing around the time Back in the USSR, and Ringo walked out. And it's actually Paul McCartney playing the drums on that track.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
Ringo
okay.
Ringo went off on holiday, and apparently that's when he wrote Octopus's Garden, because he was in Greece or somewhere in the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
And found out about these things when he was chilling and getting away from the madness of the Beatles. And they welcomed him back and they let him do that lovely song, Octopus's Garden, on the next album.
Well, we did over the Christmas period, one of the highlights, there weren't that many when it comes out to television, but one of the highlights, we watched the anthology thing on the Disney Channel.
I still haven't actually got around to watching that. Didn't see much telly over the Christmas.
9 episodes, and I must admit, I wasn't a huge Beatles fan growing up. Can you hear that racket?
I can hear something in the background. Oh, you're playing a bit of the White Album, aren't you?
If I turn it up and tell you the story in a minute, we'll go back to that. But we did watch it, 9 episodes.
Yeah.
Not a big Beatles fan before I met my wife. They were sort of there. We all knew that they had loads of hits and so on. But watching the documentaries and getting a real feel for who they were and how they were treated and how life was for them, I felt really sorry for them in the end, because it was like, it must have been like living in a goldfish bowl. But there were so many fascinating things to their story. There really was. And, you know, people saying, oh, they fell out really big. They did. They did fall out. But there was a lot of stuff that was instigated by other people. And it was it was just fascinating, really fascinating. I'm not going to spoil it for you. Watch all 9 episodes. Honestly, I was enthralled by it.
Because it actually came out originally in the 90s, so I watched it back then. But it's been rejigged, I think, because they put
added
a new album. Yeah, because they put a new album out of some extra bits and pieces they found at the end of last year. I haven't caught up with it yet.
They mention Jeff Lynne's in it as well, because obviously he was the one that rejigged some of the stuff that they did back in the 90s.
Yeah.
Late 90s, and then they did something about 2 years ago, didn't they?
Yeah, well, they wanted some tracks to add to the saleability of the anthology thing, so they found some old John Lennon demos where he just sat at a piano, played a song, and the first one was Free as a Bird, and they were able, with the technology in the 90s, to peel away the fluff and something spoiling it, get the voice, get the piano, and then work over it and make it into a full song. They only did 2 at the time, because the third one, which is the one that came out last year, the technology at the time just could not make sense of the rough little cassette demo that John Lennon had left. But by last year, 2 years ago, whenever it was, they were able to do it, and that was the song Now and Then, and that really is the last Beatles song ever.
And it was lovely watching them doing what they're doing, having a little listen back in the 90s, and then actually having that moment where they listened to the track. And you could see them getting emotional, because it was they were talking about, you know, the three of them, because at that time the three of them were still alive. There was obviously McCartney and Ringo Starr and George Harrison, and they were saying that they got really sad because the other fella wasn't there, and it was just a magical moment. It really was. The noise that you can hear in the background is something that I hope you're listening, Laura PC Wilcox, because the last time we played
this... is one of her favourites, isn't it?
There's 2 versions of this song, isn't there? There's 2 versions of the same name. Is it Revolution?
Well, this is a sound collage, I suppose you'd call it, that John Lennon and Yoko Ono created for the White Album. And you see, it's one of those solo things. It's... They did it, and I don't think any of the other Beatles were involved. It's about 9 minutes in total, and it's just...
Noise.
Noise, clips, all sorts of things. And it's the reason why most people don't play side 4 of the album.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because the song after it, there's one song after it, which is called Goodnight, which is a Ringo singing a John Lennon song, which is a lovely little way to end the album. But most people have taken the needle off long before that.
Yeah, I'm now going to stop that racket, all right? Because it's I could see why Laura PC Wilcox phoned up about 3-4 months ago, because Kieran put the wrong Revolution version on.
Oh dear!
And played that in 9 minutes in its entirety, and I had messages from Laura, and it was what is this? What is going on? It's an outrage. And I listened in, and I thought, what's going on? Is there something wrong with our signal or what? And it turned out that it was this Beatles racket. And that was on probably one of the most famous double albums, which obviously is what we're talking about.
It's probably the one double album that, if you say double album, it's one of the very few that people would think of. And I mean, we were thinking about what were the first double albums. And a lot of people say, oh, it's the Bob Dylan one, Blonde on Blonde, which just came out 2 years before that. And it's probably the first rock double album. But people forget that prior to that, there were double albums. I mean, you go way back. The only way you could get a classical piece in its entirety was to have a load of discs. I mean, if you were talking about 78, you probably had to have 8 discs or so. And they came in these wonderful cardboard wallets. But you'd be able to play about 8 minutes, then turn it over, then another one, then another one. But the I was trying to do a bit of research to find out what was the first double LP, and the best I can get, there was a Benny Goodman album released in about 1950, and it was a recording of a concert he did at Carnegie Hall. So the first double live album, because that was a real big thing in the 70s, 80s. You know, had to do a double live album. But yeah, that was the 1938 Benny Goodman concert. But the first real studio double album, I think, I stand to be proved wrong, is an Ella Fitzgerald one.
Oh, okay.
She did a thing called the Cole Porter Songbook, and it's two LPs. It's a wonderful LP. From any measure, and yeah, it's first studio double album, I think, there. But there were so few of them at this time because record companies didn't want to invest in that sort of modern pop jazz stuff. So it wasn't until the 60s when suddenly Dylan is more important than Ella Fitzgerald, and they allow him to do a double album.
Yeah, quite frankly, I don't know, you know, why they let him do that. We'll talk more on that in a little bit. We're going to take a break, and then we are going to come back with Blackbird, all right, because it's 2 minutes. And it allows
from
us
the
to
White
chat,
Album, from, yeah.
Obviously, and it allows us to chat a bit more, Jonathan.
The Mid Morning Show is proudly sponsored by PC Consultants, the island's leading provider of IT service, consultancy, and support to businesses, public sector, and private clients across the island. Call us at PC Consultants on 01983 811 711 to find out more about our award-winning service.
Waiting for this moment to arrive.
It's arrived. He's finished. That's the Beatles and Blackbird, which is taken from one of the better known double albums of all time, would you say?
I think so, yeah. I don't know about best selling. That's probably Saturday Night Fever. But it's, yeah, one of the best White albums. One of the best double albums is the White Album.
Well, you just got me thinking about the Saturday Night Fever one, because obviously that was a doubler as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So was Grease as well,
Grease,
wasn't it? I
yeah.
loved the Grease one. Wasn't really into the Saturday Night Fever thing, but...
I think I got Grease for my 10th birthday.
Did you really?
Yeah. I've still got it somewhere.
What's your favourite track from it?
From Grease?
Yeah, because you must have something you remember from your childhood. Where you go, oh, that's a song that never actually releases a single. Look at me, I'm Sandra Dee.
No, actually, moment of honesty, I have to be hopelessly devoted to you.
Really?
Yeah. Don't look at me while I say that.
I had to look away because you were looking at me in such a way.
Yeah, well, Olivia Newton-John was a thing back then, wasn't she?
Yes, and I listened to her book a few years back, her autobiography, just before she passed, actually, and brilliant book, really fascinating book, because she had a relationship with somebody from the Shadows, didn't she? And she had a number of relationships, and they were saying that songs were, that they were given to other people, and I think, in actual fact, I think one of the songs was offered... Yesterday was actually offered to, is it Bruce Welch? That she was.
He was the rhythm guitarist. Yeah, I can't remember.
She had a relationship with somebody from the Shadows.
There was a guy called John Ferrara as well, who was.
It wasn't him, but yeah. Whoever it is that she was having the relationship with, someone offered him the song Yesterday, and he said, "Oh, I can't do anything with that." And of course, it's one of those songs that has been recorded more times by any other artist, isn't it?
I think that and Something are probably the most versions of any. One song, yeah.
Now, all of my research, I've got to say, all of my research that I did yesterday, I put it on notes in on my iPad, and it's not come through. So I've got absolutely nothing this side other than what's in my head.
Oh, dear. That's not a lot then, is it? Right, well, moving on to the news.
That's me.
Right, well, how about... you get some interesting questions in the shop because, you know, records for some people are a complete closed book and they're wondering how it works, what goes on. But one couple of questions I had, well, one particular, someone was looking at, I can't remember which double album, and looked at it and said, there's something wrong with this because it says side one, you turn it over and it's side four. Where's side two?
Right.
But then if you look at the other disc, it's side two and three.
Oh.
Why do you do that?
Why do they do that?
Because do you remember the old dance set record changes? You pile up the records.
Oh, yeah.
And they go down.
Oh,
so
right.
Instead of having to get up three times to listen to your whole double album, a lot of them in the 70s were printed. So side one, and then you could put the one with sides two and three on top of it. So you'd get side one and side two without having to get up. And all you have to do is get up once, flip it over, then you get sides three and four.
Oh, right. And of course, on the album that we were talking about earlier on, you even get a little reminder from someone to say, please turn me over, don't you, at the end of the track.
That's right, yeah, the James Gang one.
Look, I found my details. I found all my stuff. So, yeah, White Album we've done. Another one that was massive back in the day, roughly the same time as some of the ones that we've mentioned in the 70s, was obviously, Grease and Saturday Night Fever. The Wall.
The Wall. That was a really big seller, still is, yeah. But it's... Do you ever sit through the whole thing?
I never owned it. My brother did. He was really into Beatles and Pink Floyd and so on. And I knew what there was only one single on it, was there? Wasn't there?
Another Brick in the Wall.
Yeah, but there were many versions of it, is that right?
No, I mean, it was... It's been redone on stage, and there have been various different versions of it done live, but the Wall is the Wall.
Wasn't there another Brick in the Wall, the song, parts 1, 2, and 3?
Yeah, they're all slightly different versions of the same basic idea through the album, because it tells...
Well, that's what I said.
I'm so sorry. Dear old dear. People have to work with sometimes.
You'll get Laura PC Wilcox on the phone in a minute.
But yeah, I mean, the album is for some, it's hard going, but it's a story about all the things that affected Roger Waters in childhood, and or the character, Pink. Pink is a character in the album, and caused him to build a wall against the world.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things like Tommy, the story... be very difficult to write down and follow. I mean, they tried to make a film of it, but again, it's not an easy watch. I mean, I love the album. I think there's some of the amazing playing there. But the whole reason it came out was because they had tax trouble.
Oh, right.
They were stitched up by accountants, and they found out in 1978 they owed hundreds of thousands. And they only had two ideas, both Roger Waters' ideas, and that was the one they picked, and they went off and recorded it just to pay the tax bill.
And then
they all fell out over it. The keyboard player Rick Wright ended up leaving during the album. So it's quite it's one of those ones with a really fraught and interesting backstory. But yeah, it's sold millions and millions over the years.
When you bought yours, how much did it cost you?
I think it cost... I bought it in Teagues the Union Street one in Ryde.
Right.
I think it cost £8.45. It was a really expensive one.
Yeah, because obviously it's two discs.
Yeah,
and so on. How much is it now?
If we were to get a new copy, I'm not sure. Standard price for single albums that come in, so if you say something like Dark Side of the Moon, Wish You Were Here, if they're a new pressing, is £24 to £28.
But a double.
It's probably mid 30s.
Wow!
I'd say we've got a couple of second hand copies there at the moment, and they're differing quality. So they sort of range from about... I think we've got one for about 20, but up to a quite expensive one. But yeah, that's the other thing with double albums; they cost a lot. So
the one that popped out, I had to check this over and over again, because I thought, I don't remember that being a double album. I didn't own it. I bought the singles and I loved the band as well. London Calling.
Yeah,
didn't know that was a double album.
That's a fantastic double album.
Yeah, yeah. I know some of the tracks. So when I bought The Greatest Hits, it was almost like buying that album, because it had so many things on there, like Train in Vain, Clamp Down, and stuff like that. It was just brilliant tracks.
And what they did afterwards was a triple album.
Did they?
Sandinista.
Right, okay.
There aren't many triple albums out there.
No, so we'll have to... Didn't you bring in a triple album with you today?
I did.
Hold that thought. We're going to take a break. See if you can guess what this triple album is, because there ain't many of them. But there is a tripler. You've got a tripler over there. You've got a little tripler over there. We're coming back in two ticks. Beatles and a birthday on Vectis Radio. Jonathan Bacon is in from AAA Records, our friends from AAA Records, and we are talking double albums. Now, just before the break, you said that you had a triple album on you.
Well, I did. It's not the one I meant to bring in. I grabbed it at the last minute. It's an album called Yes Songs, which is a triple live album, when you had those sort of things by big prog bands in the 70s. The one I would have grabbed, which is probably the most famous triple album, is Woodstock, the soundtrack of that film.
Oh, right, okay.
That was one of the first big triple albums. But there were other big triple albums in the 70s.
Did Genesis do a triple album?
No, they did one called Three Sides Live.
That's confusing.
Which was, as the title suggests, and this leads on to something interesting. So it's Three Sides Live, so they did their live show and then had a couple of other tracks on the remaining side.
Okay.
But what do you do if you've only got enough of three sides of an album?
Three Sides Live. I think So
but was it one I thought side this would blank? Be interesting. This is really visual radio for everyone out there. There's got a couple of albums here. This first one's Johnny Winter. And it's called Second Winter. But if you go to what you'd normally think would be side four, there's nothing on it.
Oh, right. Nothing on it at all.
Nothing on it at all. There are a few albums out there where they put together three sides and then that was it, and printed nothing on the last side.
Okay.
And there's another one here, jazz one. Roland Kirk is well known if you like jazz, and it's got a little message on the back, because again it's a blank disc, but this is side four of a three-sided album. There's no music on this side. Grooves have been cut in the record so that no damage can be done to the stylus or tone arm if this side were accidentally placed on the changer.
So what does it play?
Silence.
Just silence.
Silence. There's a groove there, so as I say, you don't put your needle down, it goes zoom, shoots into the middle.
Oh, so it just plays for.
So it just sits there going round with nothing coming out.
Is another track. Do you remember a guy called Richard Digence?
Yeah.
He did a radio show, a late night radio show, and he said one of the biggest disappointments in his life was he put on an album and it was the first track on the album and then fell asleep. And no one phoned to complain about the silences in between. So look, we mentioned Genesis. Didn't they have it was the Lamb?
The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. That's another one of those mid-70s prog albums with, like, The Wall and Tommy with a very strange story.
Have you got a copy of that? Have you listened to it? Are you a fan?
Of course I'm a prog fan. Everyone's got a copy of it, but how often do you listen to it? It's another question.
I've never listened to it, but every time I hear interviews and stuff like that, people always talk about it. And my wife, I think she's got a copy of it somewhere. And I just think, do I really want to listen to it if other people are running it down and so on? So maybe, you know, before I fall off.
If you like Peter Gabriel Genesis, then yes, it's the sort of
weird
culmination of that. But
right. See if you can guess what this album is being described to you. It was originally released as a single and a double album, forming a three-act rock opera satirising censorship, religion, music industry, absurdities and authoritarian government. Any takers?
I think there's only one that falls into that category. Frank Zappa, Joe's Garage.
So would you say that was one of the top 10 double albums of all time?
Because it's a triple album.
Is it?
Yeah, because it was a single album. The three volumes came out initially as a single album, and then volumes 2 and 3 as a double album a few months later. And now if you want to go and get it, it's packaged up all as a triple album.
Yeah.
And it's very rude.
Very rude.
Very
so
rude.
So we'll save that bit to the end then. There are others. I mean, I'm surprised you haven't mentioned the Led Zeppelin one yet.
Which is probably my favourite one. Well, we've been talking about other stuff, haven't we?
Yeah, we have, yeah.
But yeah, Led Zeppelin. Again, it's one of those things, they didn't have enough for a full double album, but they had more than for a single album. So what happened with that album, they trawled back into the archive and found some tracks they hadn't had time for before. And so they added to the initial, I think it was 8 tracks they had, and made it up to 15, and it became a double album. It's very few people who've recorded studio double albums from the whole thing in one go, and, you know, done it successfully. So, you know, even Led Zeppelin, that wasn't a true double album, if you like. It was partly the new music plus a compilation of all the leftovers from the previous few years.
Right, okay.
But it's still a very good record.
And the name of the album was?
Physical Graffiti.
Okay, all right. So what else have you got on your list? I've got loads here now.
What else have I got on my list? What else
we haven't mentioned Elton John, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
We haven't, and that's a good one.
Yeah.
One of his better ones. Actually, that's a triple album, All Things Must Pass by George Harrison.
Do you remember earlier on, there was a George Harrison song that was due to be played out on a playlist, and we didn't play it. And I said, was that from a double album? And I was getting mixed up with a guy from the Isle of Wight actually recorded that album, All Things Must Pass. And I've got a copy of that at home. It sounds fantastic. It sounds more like George Harrison than him. It really does.
Well, it probably does
it
now.
It really does. Look, we have run out of time, unfortunately. We have run out of time. So, go on, do one more.
Oh, one more. Oh, just so I close everything up. Actually, The Wall we were talking about.
Yeah.
There's a brilliant cover version of it. It's there's a group called Luther, Right and the Wrongs.
You lent me that and I've still got it.
That's where it went.
Yeah, I've
had
got
to buy
it.
Another copy.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh,
but
thanks.
It's a bluegrass version of The Wall. It's fantastic.
All right, well, look, we didn't even
That's
get
my
a
recommend.
Chance.
Exile on Main Street, Quadrophenia, Layla, Electric Ladyland. We should talk about them on another show.
We should, and I say, we haven't even mentioned Stevie Wonder, Songs in the Key of Life.
Which was a double album plus because there was an extra single in it because he couldn't fit everything on.
See, you're a walking mine of information. One of my favourite double albums of all time, Prince, Sign of the Times.
Oh, yeah.
We've got to come back.
We haven't even touched the 80s, have we?
No, we haven't. We've got a dilemma, okay? You got a track that you said, put that on, and I've got it ready. Too Darn Hot, Ella Fitzgerald. I've since learned this lunchtime that The Clash, London Calling, was a double album. Yeah?
Yep.
You get to choose which one.
Well, we've mentioned both, haven't we? Let's just go for London Calling.
Yeah?
Wake people up for the next show.
London Calling. All right, so I'm just deleting that, okay? And I've got a little jingle that it might interest you.
Oh, yes.
All right. All we've got to say is big thanks for coming in.
Pleasure as always.
See you in a month's time for another topic. Got another topic ready?
Not off the top of my head. We will think of something. It was a bit of a rush today, so
we will do double
a bit of planning next time.
Yeah, we'll do double albums too later in the year. We'll also do B-sides later in the year as well.
We could do the worst records in the world.
The worst records in the world. Well, that record that you just said, then with no music on, just add the groove. That's got to be running it close, isn't it?
That could be on the list. That could be on the list. Yeah.
All right. Okay. See you in a month's time. Thank you.
Thanks ever so much.